and privileged to open our program this morning with the most honored journalist in international reporting. He has 24 Emmy Awards. He has, of course, he is an icon in media. He is a co-editor and producer of the biggest and most watched news magazine program called 60 Minutes. He is known throughout the world. And we're delighted to welcome you, Bob Simon. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. Whenever I hear that that introduction, it sounds like an obit, so it gets a little bit disturbing. But I also wonder who you're talking about. It doesn't sound like me at all.
Oh, well, maybe I didn't cover it, because actually, first of all, let's start off. You're a Bronx boy.
I am, yes.
Bread and buttered in the Bronx. What part of the Bronx?
In the South Bronx, which was a different kind of neighborhood then than it is now. It wasn't a battleground. And in fact, it was a neighborhood that was sort of, I guess, two-thirds Irish Catholic and one-third Jewish. Nobody else got in. I think I was 18 before I met a Protestant.
My God. Yeah.
You know, so I got to know Irish Catholics when I was very, very young.
And we want to ask you, of course, to make that or to talk about that period, other than to say, little would you have known at that point that someday, despite all of your travels throughout the world, as an international investigative reporter and commentator, that one day you would be going to what was considered one of the most Catholic countries in the entire world, and you would be going to cover a topic of child abuse scandal in Ireland, and that you would be interviewing and getting the story directly from one of the most treasured archbishops in Ireland, Diarmuid Martin, who indeed is a massive and very prominent critic of the Catholic Church. How did that come about, Bob?
First of all, I had a lot of experience in Ireland. I was covering the troubles in Northern Ireland from the late 60s until the mid-70s. And whenever we needed a break from that awful situation, we went down south and spent as much time as we could in Dublin. So
yes.
Dublin wasn't foreign territory for me. The way we got to the story, actually, is frankly it's nothing I'm proud of. Maureen Dowd wrote a column a couple of years ago, or even more recently than that, about Archbishop Martin and about what had been going on in Dublin. Now, sexual abuse on the part of the church and part of priests was not a new story. We had it all over the United States. I think Philadelphia was a low point. And then it surfaced in several European countries. As I recall, Belgium had a pretty poor record. But we didn't hear anything about Ireland. And I didn't even think about it. But then I read this Maureen Dowd piece, and my heavens, Ireland too, is it? So right away I knew that that I wanted to do the story. The problem from the start was Archbishop Martin was very hesitant. We talked to him a few times on the phone. We talked to his public relations person several times, and it was always terribly friendly, but he wasn't at all sure he wanted to get into it. So it took quite a few months of dialogue and diplomacy, I guess you'd call it, before he agreed.
Yeah. On meeting him, what were your first impressions, the man himself?
Well, my first impressions were, it is very rare in my business that we get to meet somebody we admire right away. And, I've been doing this a long time, so you can tell pretty quickly whether a man is honest or not. And it was so perfectly clear that I was sitting next to a very honest and devoted man, so I liked him from the very start.
Did you at any point get the feeling that he had somewhat of a chip on his shoulder with respect to Rome, the way that the Vatican, that the Pope had handled the sex scandals in Ireland? Was there a bit of... Did you suspect that there was a bit of grievance there, that something he couldn't get over?
What I suspected and what he said were diametrically opposed. He would not get into Rome. He wouldn't touch the Vatican. Now, I heard from other people I talked to in Dublin who are very well acquainted with the workings of the church that the Vatican had to have been involved in a lot of this. But Archbishop Martin wouldn't go near it.
What did you feel that he wanted in terms of a message to come back? Was it your idea, 60 Minutes, did they request that, in fact, he would take you on this, back to the seminary, to where he started off? Was that something that he thought would be a good idea, or was that something that you kind of insisted on?
Well, no, you don't insist on anything with the Archbishop. And we had no idea what he would be willing to share with us when we went over there. We had trouble convincing him because he was afraid that we were going to do a profile of him. And he did not want that to be the story. He wanted the real Irish story to be told, but he was afraid that 60 Minutes, as very often we do profiles of individual people, and he did not want to be the star of the show. So we had to convince him, and convince him honestly, that it wasn't just going to be about him, that it would be about the situation in Ireland in general, and that we would go to places far from Dublin and interview priests and people who lived far from Dublin.
Which, in fact, you did. You, among other things, you went down to West Cork, and you got the parish I never heard of, and it's not that important, but you did meet those who might have been critical of Martin, or did they stay away from that?
No. They admired Martin enormously. In fact, we didn't meet any parishioner who did not admire Archbishop Martin and who didn't have only the very best things to say about him. Archbishop Martin has had trouble with the clergy.
Yes.
He's not very popular among the clergy, and he certainly isn't very popular in the Vatican. But among people in Ireland, no, everyone had nothing but the finest things to say about him.
Yeah, but do the people you interviewed and who spoke with you, do they buy what Archbishop Martin is saying? And he says that the child abuse scandal is not over, that it will continue. Is some of it perceived by others as, this fellow isn't going to let go of it? Now it's it's public record. It's there for the world to see. How can we believe that this is going to be ongoing?
Well, I think there were several things that shocked people about Archbishop Martin's revelations, and one of them was that it had happened so recently. That they had evidence that it was still going on in 2009. So this wasn't ancient history we were talking about. This was something that was still happening. And they knew that it would go on happening unless they took very stringent steps to prevent it, which they were doing. Now, in the town we went to, Ellis, they had not been any abuse by priests there. But they were terribly aware of what had been happening. And they already took measures to make sure it wouldn't happen there. For example, a priest can no longer be alone with a child anywhere. there has to be a respected adult present at all times. So that is a pretty major step when you think about
right.
the intimate relations with priests. I don't mean intimate in a sexual way. When you think of the very personal relations priests have had with their parishioners over the centuries, that all of a sudden a priest is not allowed to be alone with a child.
Can you bring us to the point where he brought you to the seminary and said when he entered the seminary, there were 120 seminarians like himself, and now they're lucky if they get 10
right.
In terms of vocations. Was he accepting that, or was he in any way suggesting that, you know, the sex scandals in Ireland was very much responsible, somewhat responsible, or nearly totally responsible for the lack of vocations?
Very much responsible, not totally, because we all noticed that several years ago when the phenomenon, when the story in Ireland was the Celtic Tiger.
Right.
And people were getting rich. Rich people don't go to church quite as much as poor people. And it's just a phenomenon international. It has nothing to do with Ireland. So the church was already on the decline in terms of numbers of people who were attending Mass. And this just dealt it a final blow. Did Archbishop Martin believe that the church is now dead? No. But he knows it's going to be one heck of a struggle to inject some life into it again.
How upset is he that Ireland, the island of saints and scholars, who actually had to export clergy throughout the world because there were too many of them in his lifetime, that now churches in Ireland, even if the populace were to all show up in the morning, if there was a change of heart with the Irish parishioner, they wouldn't even have enough priests to man these churches. As a matter of fact, they don't right now.
That's right, and that is one of the shocking aspects of the story, that Ireland has a shortage of priests. That's like saying that, I don't know, Italy has a shortage of pasta.
Yeah.
And what he was saying also was that the priests, yes, Ireland exported his priests, and certainly those of us who grew up in neighborhoods with a large number of Irish Catholics, I mean, all the priests were Catholic. We chose the town of Elis to go to precisely because it always has been, of course, a totally Catholic town, and it doesn't have its own priest for the first time in history. There's a commuting priest who drops by and drops by several other towns
right.
once a week at the most to do what a priest does, which is a totally different relationship that the community has than it's had in the past. And that's when it really gets, that's when it affects not only the fact that Ireland doesn't export priests anymore, but it's affecting Catholic life in Ireland.
Bob Simon, did you get a feeling that some part of Archbishop Diarmaid Martin might feel that he may be, you know, maybe he has crossed the line, maybe he has difficulty in pulling back, because definitely having a, you know, an archbishop of his standing, they're saying, you know, the church will survive, but this is not the end of child abuse, is for some saying, why doesn't he, you know, get over it? Why doesn't he put a positive spin on it? We all know how he feels. We all know that he has, you know, great respect from clergy. Why doesn't he now move on to encouraging the Catholics of Ireland to say, listen, take this. You're not getting any. There won't be any more cover-ups. Things have changed, and so now let's turn the corner. What does he say in terms of hope for the future?
Not much. And when you say, why doesn't he put a positive spin on it, he's precisely the guy I admired because he doesn't put a spin on anything. He tells you what he thinks and feels. And he doesn't say that the child abuse scandal is over. He says that it could continue. He doesn't say it definitely will continue. He says there just has to be a vigilance that there never has been before. And remember, when you talk about will it continue or not, he has a limited jurisdiction. He's the Archbishop of Dublin. Dublin
right.
is a very small part of Ireland. He has nothing to do with what goes on in the countryside.
And he's a thorn in the side, you know, obviously, of the cardinal and, you know, of the hierarchy. They wish he would shut up. But you do feel that bottom line is the church will survive despite the reality that perhaps scandals will continue.
He didn't give that kind of
prediction or. He didn't give that kind of prediction?
No, but I'm looking for a word which I'm sorry, I can't find. It's too early in the morning for me. But
and for me too.
He wasn't painting a rosy future. He didn't listen. It's very easy when the knee-jerk reaction to a crisis is, by God, we'll get through it and we'll be even better than we were before. But he's not that. He doesn't deal in cliches like that. He's not saying we will be reborn. He's saying we're in very, very deep trouble, and we may or may not be okay in 10 years from now.
Bob Simon, when you got to Cork and you got to meet with parishioners and priests and others, did any of them say or hint that the responsibility for the child abuse in Ireland was definitely either aided, the cover-ups were aided by Rome? Did anybody try to shift the blame to Rome at any point?
No, and neither did Archbishop Martin. It was an Irish phenomenon. Rome knew about it and did not act on it, but that's nobody said that therefore Rome was responsible. It was the responsibility of the Irish Church for covering it up, because the Irish Church knew everything and refused to share its documentation because it had
right.
very, very fastidious documentation. It refused to share that documentation with the Murphy Commission, the state commission that was looking into that. And it was only after Archbishop Martin came to Dublin and saw what had been going on that he turned over the documents.
Yeah.
So nobody feels very good about. I mean, I think there's a general acceptance by people who've thought about this that the Vatican does not get off of this unscathed. On the contrary,
hardly considering that our new Taoiseach, Prime Minister of Ireland, wasn't a wet week in the job when, he and his deputy decided that they would close down the Irish embassy in Rome, which, again, was almost as shocking.
Yeah, when has that ever happened before?
in another period, the Catholics of Ireland, would grab a blackthorn stick and say, what the hell are you talking about? Can't do that.
Well, you tell me, because you know the subject intimately. Do you think the Catholics of Ireland were always beholden to Rome?
Yes.
Yeah?
Well,
okay.
When I grew up, when I was growing up, it was, Rome was the ultimate authority.
Mm-hmm.
The Pope was infallible. Anything that he said, that was coming directly from God. There was and I'm sure you found out as you were in Ireland and talking to people, the adulation of the clergy, up until recently, the local parish priest had more authority, more respect, than the police chief.
Indeed, and we make that point in our story. I always felt, but you know far more than I do, that the Irish, religious Irish Catholics, indeed, worship may be too strong, but really looked up to their parish priest, and Rome didn't enter into it that much, except for John Paul, who was very popular. But other than that, I think it was to such a large extent an Irish phenomenon. But now we know. I mean, listen, it's not a secret that Archbishop Martin was slated to be a cardinal, and that ain't happening.
No.
Not only that, but two Irish bishops, were they bishops? I don't remember. I think they were bishops. Who had been implicated in the cover-up,
right.
Archbishop Martin wanted them to resign, and they agreed, and Rome refused. Rome reinstated them.
Right.
So there's a battle going on between the Archbishop and Rome, which he would not talk about.
The Celtic Tiger, the downturn, the shame that came to Ireland, that's where Ireland, the Celtic Tiger, became the poster child for recklessness and everything else that goes with it. Did this overshadow, to some degree anyway, the church scandals, people getting up in the morning, realizing that they were not going to see any of that during their lifetime? They may lose their homes, they'd have to get rid of the three or four luxury cars that were outside. Did you get the feeling somewhere along the way that somebody says, we're in so much trouble anyway, this isn't even, that much of an issue, to hell with it?
Not at all. We talked to dozens of people and nobody even brought that up.
Oh.
They were in shock because of this scandal. And remember also, the Celtic Tiger was a pretty ferocious beast a few years ago. It ain't quite as ferocious anymore.
Well, that's putting it mildly.
Yeah. So, no, that never came up. And we talked to an awful lot of people, and it just never came up.
Tomorrow night, you're, and of course, 60 Minutes, CBS television. You were almost around and a part of that from the get-go. You as a reporter and then as a correspondent and as you were traveling the world, the icon of CBS 60 Minutes was growing. What brought you, attracted you into 60 Minutes versus the other hard news topics that you were covering throughout the world?
Well, I've been doing this for 45 years, and I was a hard news maven until 15 years ago. In fact, no, even more than that, because when I started at 60 Minutes, it was part-time. And 60 Minutes is where you float up to if you're lucky. It's certainly, frankly, without blowing smoke, it's the best news magazine program in the United States. So to float up there is feels pretty good.
Right. And many, of course, even before the onslaught of cable television, many television stations and media says, let's replicate that, because that seems to go, and that isn't happening, and I don't think it can happen.
Well, I don't know whether it can or not, but it hasn't.
Listen, we're looking forward very much tomorrow night, 60 Minutes, CBS Television Network. Bob Simon. And again, I have to say, because nowhere in any kind of journalistic annals is it Bob Simon, without saying the most honored journalist in international reporting. And we're very honored that you took time out this morning. We'll be watching you tomorrow night.
Well, I certainly hope so. We love viewers. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks a lot. Bob Simon, friends, the epitome of credibility, as is CBS. CBS 60 Minutes, the most watched across the United States television news magazine, television which is and has been a stalwart part of the American fabric, started in 1968 and is extraordinarily popular indeed. Friends, you are listening to the Flannelly Show live from New York.